This podcast is brought to you by our friends at Advantages Digital Learning Solutions, where learning is reimagined.
Hello, and welcome to Learning Reimagined. We have another exciting teacher panel. It's been a while, so Sandy and I are very excited to check in with everybody and just see what's been going on with in the world of education lately. So Sandy and I welcome you all. Hello.
Yes, it's been a little bit, and we're just really anxious to hear everybody's pulse on what's happening in their districts and their corner of the world, and just been so anxious to hear their voices again. So welcome, welcome.
Sandy, why don't you go ahead and start us off? I know you've been very concerned. Sandy lives in the Clark County School District, which is the fourth or fifth largest school district in the nation, and typically if it's happening in Clark County, it's typically reflected around the nation. Sandy, why don't you go ahead and talk about what the current trend is that you're seeing that's making you very uncomfortable?
Well, one of the things that just affects the whole community is the safety issue. And as you mentioned, Clark County is the fifth largest school district in the nation. So they deal with a lot of numbers. But where just really the part that I'm so concerned with is the safety issue. Our teachers here, there's in the news, they've held dealt with a lot of not feeling safe in their classrooms. And there's been assaults, there's been violence. It's just keeps escalating.
And can you expand on that? Assaults and violence? What are teachers, are they seeing it like among the kids?
Yes, among the students, and there's no repercussions for their students getting out of hand. And so because there's no repercussions, then the students feel like they have control of their classroom. So, for example, there was a teacher, a student was not happy with her grade, stayed after school and assaulted the teacher. It was one-on-one. The janitor ended up finding her up unconscious in the closet. And this just happened 2 weeks ago. It's just the scariest thing ever. And our teachers, I feel, are just, they put so much into their profession. And where is the safety net? I felt like that was always assumed. And now I just feel like that's not the case. Not that this is something that is being experienced everywhere, but it certainly is really scary. It's absolutely scary. And so that is one of the things that alarms me. And I see it every day in our news channels here. If it's not one high school, it's another high school, and even feeling it on the middle school level. So I just was wondering, what's the climate like for safety in the schools where you're all at?
Yeah, well, I live in the Central Valley in California, and last week we had in Stockton, which is next door to my district, we had a man drive up to a high school, walk through the gates, and stab a 15-year-old student to death. Just
my gosh!
Completely unprovoked, witnessed by students everywhere. It was during a passing period. The school resource officer was there and arrested the man. He's in jail, but totally unprovoked. And so it was kind of a wake-up call. I know our district responded immediately. The superintendent sent out a message, and we got emails from our principal about, gates, making sure they're locked and security. So I think we see it here in California as well. It just happened to hit really close to home last week. And it's really disturbing because there was no reason. He didn't know her. It was completely random. So when something like that happens, Sandy, I think you're right. It shakes up the whole community.
Joel, I'm concerned about you in the middle school because you start to see things happening at that age. Usually, hopefully Carol doesn't have any input on this one with kindergartners, but Joel, with middle school, I would expect you have some insight.
You know, we talk a lot about, and we've discussed regression in terms of academics during those COVID years, the last few years, and coming back from COVID and really trying to enhance that. I think that we anticipated some level of social regression as well, or maybe a lack of social development, maybe rather than regression. And so we attribute a lot of the classroom disruptions and social issues between students in particular due to a lack of that social development. Like we have a couple of years regression. For example, the way that we're dealing with our eighth graders is the way that we generally talk with our brand new sixth graders. So maybe it's on the basketball court, students don't know how to play with one another. They don't know how to vocalize that they're upset. They don't know how to recognize feelings or identify their feelings. And so they know that they're disappointed if their friends aren't playing with them, which might lead to a fight or an argument, where before students might have been able to recognize that through just social development in general. Our counselors are seeing a lot of that. Our dean's office deals with discipline is certainly seeing a lot of that. Certainly not to the extent that Lynn's discussing, but I think that it is a nationwide issue that there's been a lot of talk about teachers feeling frustrated, upset, don't know how to manage their classrooms, especially because these are new issues that maybe they didn't learn in school or haven't dealt with before. So there is a lot of focus on that, certainly, I think, everywhere. So elementary, too, I would imagine that Carol is probably even seeing that at her level, too.
Yes. Hi, everyone. I'm going to piggyback on what Joel said. And I am in Southern California. I'm in San Bernardino County. And we have seen, even in elementary school, everywhere between TK and sixth grade, we've seen this regression of or lack of the ability to communicate and do it effectively. And we have to remember that they, for about a year and a half, they were at home, and many of, at least our children, many of them were home alone or with older siblings. So there weren't any consequences to behaviors that otherwise would have been nipped in the bud at school or talked through or problem solved or taught how to problem solve. And so for a year and a half, they haven't had to really answer, or maybe they did. Many did. Let's just, I don't want to, you know, broadly say that no children have, but we do have to remember that there's a significant amount of families who had to work during this pandemic, and kids were left either with babysitters or multiple family homes. And so we have to go back and say, well, why? Right. And now we're seeing the effects of that. In our elementary school, I just received an email this last week stating that we're utilizing our intervention teachers who otherwise would like pull out students and work with small groups, and they're going to filter into our fifth and sixth grade classrooms. So we have to put our intervention to the side to help develop a lot of those skills that are lacking or have regressed. And that's how we're utilizing our resources now. We don't have additional resources, unfortunately, to be able to pull from other schools or the district can hire. But so we have to, our principal within our own school said, we have to make sure these last few months of school are as positive as possible. And so that's, you know, a positive note in that we can do something about the problem that's happening. But we have seen some pretty horrific, as you all mentioned, things happening in the school that teachers didn't have to deal with earlier, you know. So even in elementary school.
I'm hopeful that the intervention that's taking place that you're seeing at your level is going to be preemptive enough to keep what happening at Sandy's area from happening nationwide. You know, I think, I really think our the lack of social development or the social disruption is going to supersede the need for academic. I think both are vital, but I think the social component, you can't learn if the social component's not in place. If you're not safe, you're not going to be focused on academics. So,
you know, I'm in early education, and children want to be seen and heard. And when they are, they feel safe, they feel happy, and then they can learn. And many of my children that have these behavioral issues, I can't even get to academics until I can solve that behavior. And I'm sure Lynn, you see this, and Joel, you see this as well. We really have to get to the behavior, because there's so many distractions with that behavior, not just with themselves, but with other students, that it doesn't lend for a academic environment. So that's what I think should be in place. Initially, there should be a place where we can help solve those behavioral issues to get to those academics.
Yep. The social, the crisis of the pandemic I think is just, it's so long. It's not even just the health and the health of everybody. It's really the mental wellness now is really, I think we're really going to see the ramifications of COVID on that level. And I'm exhausted just thinking about what you all are dealing with. And which leads us into another conversation is, I know a lot of teachers, I personally know three people that went to early retirement just this semester, just because they can't, they're done. They're just exhausted. They are mentally and physically just so overwrought that they can't continue. So what are you guys seeing? Another friend of mine had like 5 pages of transfers available at her school, in her school district. That's, I mean, 5 pages worth of open positions. And so as teachers and as an administrator, how are you guys, what are you seeing in your environment? Is that as far reaching as I'm afraid that it is?
In Lodi, we have on average, every other week we have a board meeting and there's 10 to 12 teachers resigning. But this school year we have 80 unfilled teaching positions. And so that's 80 classrooms with rotating roving subs. Subs can only work for a specific amount of days, like 30 to 60. So there's been a revolving door. And so when you have 80 open positions, and let's just say that, you know, even affected 20 kids, that's 160. It's way more than that, right? Way more than that. But when you're talking about rotating subs are great. We have amazing subs, but we don't have enough subs. And so then when you have our subs in long-term positions, then daily subs we don't have. So we, our kids lose their electives and all that. So it's been a real nightmare for us here. We're also still in a contract dispute. So we have a lot of people leaving my district for greener pastures, staying in education, but just leaving where they're a little bit more respected. So it's really hard because we're all absorbing the lack of teachers. And so it is affecting not just the students who don't have a teacher, but those of us teaching who are absorbing the workload of others. So it's very frustrating.
I feel there's also a handful of positions that have been open that haven't been in the past. For example, in my district, they're opening an online school, not just an online option, but an entire school with a principal through the district. And so some teachers are choosing to maybe not be in person, but go online. And so that's also an option for many teachers that if they don't want to retire, they're not ready to retire, but just aren't feeling like they can be in the classroom at this moment, but still want to be in education. I know Joel, you see TikTok as well, but there's so many more advertisements on within the field of education, what other routes you can take and still be happy with being an educator, but maybe working for a different company. So I feel like I didn't see those options presented in the past. I think, you know, it's been more advertised through social media and through advertisements in general. So.
Yeah. In addition to these new positions, there are also additional positions due to COVID relief monies. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about other districts, but our school district has certainly taken advantage of those federal funds. So we've opened up a lot more positions. So right now, between transfer period being open around springtime, where teachers are selecting another school for another school year, maybe resigning, Allison, like you discussed, or new positions that are coming open, there's just a lot. As a result of this federal money coming through and knowing that is a temporary funding source for a couple years, some positions have been listed as one-year onlys, which are then posted again. So in our school district, we have a lot of one-year only positions that we were not sure were going to be around for longer than a year. But as a result of this federal money continuing at least for another year or two, they'll post as one-year only. So ones that actually might have people filled in them now and will again with the same person are being posted again. But I will tell you that I think that we've heard a lot about teachers leaving for the reasons that we were discussing, safety, classroom management concerns, accountability, public scrutiny, certainly at school, I know it's not specific just to our school district. There are many districts that are struggling with ramifications of the public in school district meetings. That comes back to teachers just feeling not supported. There's a variety of different things. So even more so than ever, administrators should be focusing on, and I know many are, on retention strategies. What are we doing to support teachers and personnel to ensure that they're staying in education? Mm-hmm. How are we validating our fields? What do we have control of that we can take off the teachers' needs to make sure that they're feeling supported? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, yeah, you're right. We're going to see schools that not great administration losing a lot of staff for all the reasons that we discussed.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially when you're leaning on the administration to substitute for some of these classrooms. So the responsibilities that they're normally able to address on point that morning or that day, they're being postponed because of all these other things that they're having to do. So it's hard to support the staff when you're not even able to address it at that level. So and like Carol said earlier, when she's addressing these young scholars that they're at the kindergarten age, they need to feel safe. They need to feel heard before they can learn. I think that addresses humans all the way through the spectrum, you know, as you know, you go into work and you spend so many hours in your job and you just want to be able to feel like you're appreciated.
So. And valued. Absolutely. And I'm sure Joel, your teachers feel it. I know who you are as a leader and I'm sure you're staff does, but I worry nationwide is, I mean, as you said, you know, because we are in such a shortage, some schools are not getting stellar administration. And what do you guys see or what have you heard about teacher recruitment? What is the Department of Education doing to recruit more teachers, incentivize teachers, anything to give us hope?
I don't know that it's Department of Education necessarily. I know that it's really up to the district to retain and keep teachers. But for example, our sister district next door to us is paying $5,000 signing bonuses for teachers and $7,000 for SLPs and school psychologists. And so, you know, they had a job fair. They had great turnout. My district just had a job fair. We had poor turnout. And so I think if your district is really making it appealing, especially young kids coming out of college with debt, you know, that makes all the difference. And so it's really where each district chooses to allocate their money. And if they want to retain good teachers, then they're going to need to dangle that carrot, especially, you know, we want young right out of college kids with energy and great ideas and all the latest. And so to be able to get those is very hard when you don't have something appealing to grab them.
Well, your district can't even get your contract in order. So it's not surprising to me that they couldn't do a good recruitment fair. do you guys think there's going to be a change in teacher qualifications or teacher certifications?
As we stand, I don't think there has been a major change, but I have heard about the CBEST that they may waive. Is anyone else on that same page that they may waive taking the test before you become a substitute teacher? In my district, they're also paying the substitutes at a higher rate per day. So if you did want to become an educator, this may be a good time to put your feet into the water.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Definitely.
Or for people to come out of retirement, if you, you know, older people
we have that wave coming too, the retirement. I think that's within the next 3 years, we have a large group of retirees ready to take their vacation.
Yeah.
And like Lynn mentioned, just having the new teachers come in, they're used to the technology. They're closer in age to these scholars. And so it's a very different energy. They're very excited. Mm-hmm. Whereas some of our veteran teachers may not be so willing to change.
Lynn's raising her hand. Some of the more veteran teachers don't embrace the technology as much as the younger ones. Or the new teachers.
You know, and just being able to embrace the TikTok or the social media or the next new thing. We have to stay on top of that in order to engage with our students.
And I agree. So I think there's so much that you guys are all dealing with, and that, well, just our country is still dealing with the learning loss, and now obviously with the social regression, I guess is a good term for it, social regression. And I've noticed that in adults too. It's not just, I mean, it's everywhere. But people, I just a fun little story. I was at a conference. It was my first big conference since the world opened up again. And I sat down in a classroom to listen to this speaker that I was very excited about. And small little room, probably 30 people. We're like shoulder to shoulder sitting in there. This woman sits down next to me, opens up her laptop, and immediately with her fake nails just starts typing away. So all you could hear is the click, 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 click of the keyboard. And the guy who was talking, I couldn't even hear him because this woman was just so loud and obnoxious typing away. She was doing like transcripting whatever he was saying. Like she wasn't even like listening actively. She was just typing away. So all the people sitting around her, that's all we could hear. And I blame it on, I mean, maybe she was just an essentially rude person, but I really truly believe she just forgot what it's like to be with, you know, in the public. I just think people have forgotten social norms, you know, I really do. But that being said, with the social loss, the learning loss, and now we're at springtime where you all are expected to do the standardized state testing. Are you meeting resistance from families? Are you meeting resistance from fellow teachers, from the kids? Are you afraid of what the results are going to say? Or are you looking forward to what the results are going to say, because then it'll prove what you've probably all noticed all along. I know there was a lot of questions all bulked into one, so just speak freely.
Well, I teach special ed, so I teach 4th through 6th grade, so they all have to take it. And it's very frustrating because we spent last week doing practice testing where they have to log in using their username and their ID and making sure their headphones work and making sure that there's nothing on the walls. And so we did that last week, and it was very hard for me because they just raise their hand and say, Mrs. Luff, I can't read the directions. Like, I teach special ed. And so for them to be expected to take this test, it's such a colossal waste, in my opinion, of my time in class. We could be doing so much more. And then on the mom side, you know, I have a junior, so he has to take it. And he just said, hey, mom, do I have to try? It doesn't mean anything. And in my mind, I'm thinking, you're right, it doesn't. But I said, absolutely not. It reflects on your school and you need to show them what you've learned. And so I am just not a big proponent of standardized testing. I think their everyday classwork is a really good indicator of what they're learning. And so I care more about his report card than I'll ever care about that paper I get in July with his results.
I was just saying that, you know, I agree with Lynn, and I think most educators would, in terms of standardized testing. It's naive to think that a single snapshot of assessment at the end of the year shows any sort of mastery for, you know, unless they're an incredible test taker. However, you know, as educators know, it's important that we take it seriously. I think as an administrator, we do put some focus on it to ensure that teachers are kind of, I say, playing the game to help students master this. So for example, if you're planning on running a marathon, right, the whole goal is to run 26 miles at some point. If you were just to jump in for the first time and try to run 26 miles, it'll be impossible. You'll fall over, you won't be successful. And so the goal is to do a little bit of training every single day to make sure that you're ready for that 26 miles. You've pushed your body enough, you've challenged it enough. So we say the same thing with a standardized test. If the students were just to jump in and take that test now, they might not be successful. But if we're doing something a little bit every single day, boosting the rigor and the relevance of the instruction every day, they might be more inclined to feel less frustrated and more successful by the time they take that test. And so we leverage it in terms of that to help develop the rigor. But I've also worked for some principals who have said, look, sometimes scores are low, sometimes they're high, sometimes you're on the right track, sometimes you're not. Use it as a baseline to do better every single year. So that's how we look at it. You know, it's a compliance piece, but how can we use it to our advantage?
I agree in that. How can you use it to your advantage? You know, I teach kinder now, but I've been teaching for 20 years, and I've taught at anywhere between K, third, and sixth. And the communication to my students has been the same throughout. It's that you're practicing a skill that you may or may not need when you graduate from college or graduate mm-hmm. from high school. You have to take the fact of the matter is you have to take an exit exam for high school. Right. So you need to practice those types of mm-hmm. skills to be able to do so. If you want to become an attorney, you have to take a bar exam. If you want to become a teacher, you have to take a state standardized test. So mm-hmm. unfortunately, a lot of the careers that, you know, children choose to go into, engineering, you have to take a state standardized test. So mm-hmm. like Joel said, if you were to jump into an assessment, never having to experience anything like that, the rigor, the length of time, it is ridiculous in some grades. Yeah. I mean, in kindergarten, they have to take an assessment called an iReady assessment, and it takes each child to do each subject for 45 minutes. Imagine 20 students each is having to sit through. We obviously break it up, but that's a solid 2.5 weeks of instruction that I could have taught many other things right. instead of having to deal with this test. So can we as educators, I always have more questions than I do answers, but can we as educators, can we find a better way to test our students, test their knowledge, to help with those standardized tests or future tests they may encounter? Yes, I think we can. But, you know, so it's a kind of a balancing act as an educator to show the value of the tests that they're taking. And also, like Lynn said, it's not the end all be all assessment. Mm-hmm. So that's my stance.
I agree. And I think that's something that teachers and administrators need to just push on to the kids and to the parents. Yes, you need to try your hardest, but this is only one small snapshot. This does not dictate your success in life. You know, this is just one piece. I remember my daughter, who she has this whole fear of failure, and she puts so much stress on herself whenever testing comes around because it's the test. And I had to sit her down and just like, seriously, it's not the end all be all, you know, and that's a hard thing, but she is a higher achieving student. And so the teacher put a lot of pressure on that group of kids. Like, we need your test scores, guys, because your test scores will help the whole class. And it was so much pressure for her that, she melted down, and it was really hard recovery for us to, you know, get her to balance the want to do well, but not the pressure to be perfect. So as teachers and educators, it's important for you guys to express that to the kids and to the parents. Try hard, but don't stress. You know, it's a fine line.
The other part that really is worrisome is every district operates under their own rules, their own set of rules. There are some districts out there that are pay per performance. And so they base these exams, these standardized tests, and actually will directly affect the salary of these teachers.
Oh, so that's awful.
When you look at that aspect, that's a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. And that dictates how they are teaching their students, the pressure that they're putting on their students, because it inevitably affects their bottom line. So mm-hmm. again, just thankfully nobody on this podcast, but I know we will have listeners that are affected by that. And it's just so disheartening because it's just a different perspective and a different view of how... we're using that.
And I think that would just encourage teachers to cheat and teach to the test. Yeah. You know, and I think yes. that invalidates the whole testing situation, period. I just think that's such a bad design. I understand trying to motivate the teachers and it doesn't really motivate the kids, but understand trying to motivate teachers somehow and hit them in the pocketbook because that's where everybody needs. But I just think it's a very poor...
Terrible.
It's just a poor idea.
It's like we're in this social experiment. Let's see if this works. Does it work?
Right.
Does it work? Let's go back to phonics, you know, or whatever the new issue might be.
When I was in the classroom, gosh, I'm a storyteller today. I have another one for you guys. When I was in the classroom, I just, not to toot my own horn, but I was a pretty good teacher. I was very strict with my kids. They were all very successful. Kept turning around. It was a Title I school, so it was a tougher neighborhood, tougher kids. But it was a great job. It really was. And I was very proud of the kids because they strove to be, you know, to achieve, but it was a Title I school. So it was a little bit difficult. At the end of the school year, when the testing results came out, my principal called me in for a one-on-one, and he pulled out my sheet of all of my kids and had highlighted in red or pink all of my kids who went down, whose test scores went down from the previous year, and highlighted in yellow the ones that had gone up. And first of all, I think there's like a huge breach with that, but I don't know the law. But anyway, he said, "Now, what did you do for these kids that you didn't do for these kids? All of your kids should have gone up." And I was in a statistics course at that time. And I'm like, no, that's not statistically possible for every single one. But he was just arguing with me that I should have 100% of my kids got increasing their scores from the previous year. And then he pulled out another teacher's set of scores, and all of them were the highlighted for improved. Well, this teacher improved all of her kids. What did she do that you didn't do? And she was teaching to the test. You know, she had the word wall up with all of the definitions of all of the terms that were on the reading portion. And I mean, I knew what she had been doing, and I refused to cheat. I have too much integrity. But she was of the mindset, if I'm getting judged on how my kids do, I'm going to make sure they succeed. You know, so that was my last year. I put in my transfer notice that day because I did not respect how he was leading the school, encouraging teachers to cheat and teach to the test. I thought that was just a poor way to run a school. So I left. But that was my, I agree with Lynn. I'm very much opposed to standardized testing. I think the value of it is, I think there is some value to it, but it's become so highly valued that it doesn't equate what it truly is. So,
yeah. You know, we have in our district, we have a brand new director of elementary ed, and she's amazing. And she has kind of brought about this concept of academic conferences. And so we use assessments like Carol was talking about, iReady. We do use those for math and language arts. And so they hire a roving sub for the day, and then they house each grade level, and the principal is there, the vice principal is there, the intervention team is there, and the grade level teachers. And they really pore over the data, and they say, where are our strengths? Where are our weaknesses? You know, your class did really well in this section. Did you teach the math unit differently? And so I think data driven reflection is a good thing.
Agreed.
Again, those are built-in curriculum assessments that we're looking at, and we're looking at as a grade level team. We're identifying kids who need additional intensive intervention. And so I think that I don't want you to think I don't think they're important, because I do think that if you use them, it is good for self-reflection. But I know, you know, I taught second grade 1 year, and I thought it was my best teaching of my entire life. I made up stupid songs to go with the curriculum. And then when we had to give benchmarks for our district, none of my students passed, and I was so defeated. And so it kind of was a learning lesson for me, like, okay, even when I'm like on point and I'm teaching and I feel good about it, doesn't mean they're going to get it, because it doesn't take 1 day to teach a whole concept.
Right.
And so, you know, I think it does help. It's good to look at your data, but I just can't put a lot of weight into our state standardized tests. Mm-hmm.
And that's perfectly
stated. No, you're right. Spot on. Go ahead, Carol.
And I think we have to go back to what group do you have that particular year? What has been their experience the years past? You know, you could have your just most amazing year, Lynn, like, you know, we all feel sometimes. And then it's just the particular group, that cohort that needed more or different or, you know, in addition to. So, but I have felt that many teachers have felt what you have felt. We think we're doing our very best, and then these results come and you just feel so defeated. And I just say blah to that.
Because it's true. It's just a snapshot for you guys as well. You know,
it
cannot be a measure of your effectiveness as a teacher. It just can't be. It can be one piece, but if your child didn't, like where I was in the Title I school, my kids didn't have breakfast that morning, or their parents got into a huge fight, or dad was arrested, or mom's in jail. Who knows what happened that morning? Mm-hmm. And my well-being is going to be based on how well they perform on a test. You know, you can't really you can't do that. I mean, I know what that means, but
you have a lot of teachers in your company, Allison, when you decided to leave because you didn't agree with how they were looking at you as a teacher after the results of your assessment. Many teachers that I work with have the same idea and are on the same page. They don't practice just for the state test. It's really we think of the students as a whole person and what they need to be successful overall. And test taking strategies and skills are great, but they're not the end all be all.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah. Allison, unfortunately, you know what, your story is not unique too. There's so many administrators that I know even personally who do the same things. They pin teachers against teachers. They use metrics like this that are really a single snapshot, unreliable metric of mastery to showcase that, where instead what they could have said is, so some of these students went down. Are you seeing the same thing in your classroom? Is there anything that we can support you with? Rather than saying, what didn't you do? Saying, let's look at these students that did do successfully and maybe say, was there something unique to them? Obviously, the answer is going to be no. What you're going to hear later down the road is these students contacting you and saying, I remember your class. You were kind. You taught me how to learn. You made me discover learning. They're not going to remember that your other colleague who taught them out of a book how to master the test. You know, that's going to be useful the one time they take a test. But what they're going to learn from you is the joy of learning. And if that isn't education anymore, then what the hell are we doing?
Absolutely. That, right. And that is why you're doing what you're doing, Joel. And you,
I love that, Joel.
I mean, that's, if my principal had done that, I probably would still be working for him. Yeah. You know, if he had spoken to me and gave me that respect. and thank goodness I'm not, because I've gone on to other things, but regardless. True. You know, I think the value that's gotten placed on those numbers, I remember when I started my PhD program, I wanted to, the person in charge of my program asked what I was going to focus on for my dissertation. And I said, I'm going to fix education. And it was so arbitrary and so broad, like it was kind of ignorant of me, but this was one of the biggest issues for me is like, parents probably don't realize how much of the budget goes to standardized testing. So much money goes there. 2 weeks' time goes there, and it's just, and for what? You know, I believe there is a place. I just think we have to evaluate the size of the place for it. It has a value, but I don't think it has. I think it's become far more of an issue than it really deserves. So parents start asking to see the budget out there. You'll be really surprised to see how much money is spent on testing. It's not going to change. We as administrators and teachers, we can't force that change. We could change the attitude, but we can't change the spending. We can't change the directive that it has to happen. It's something that is a part of what's expected in schools nowadays. And I think the shift is, hopefully, I'm hoping, my fingers are crossed, with COVID, students couldn't take the SAT and the ACT. And so for the past 2 years, kids applying to colleges did not have to take the test, test to get into college. And I think I'm probably ignorant in thinking that it's going to actually continue in that trend, but I think it would be lovely if it did, because there are so many people who don't take tests well or don't have access to the, test preps and that sort of thing. And so it's not a fair assessment. And when schools look at that and GPA with equal weight, it's not the same. It's not fair for the kids. So I'm hoping there's an adjustment to that requirement, but I don't know. Sandy, what do you think? You worked on that end of college admissions.
I was really more always, all my experience has been in the higher ed sector. So even though there has been a pause in the SAT and the ACT, there have been still universities the last 2 years. They say they don't require them, but they're highly recommending that these students take it. And if any of you know students that have been college ready, applying to schools, juniors, seniors in the last 3 years, it's It's been absolutely unpredictable. Ooh. It's so disheartening, these kids that are working so hard, and it's a gamble. They don't know where they're getting in. There's no rhyme or reason, and the stress level is extremely high. So it's really affecting a lot of young adults right now. So May 1 is around the corner. That's the big deadline date for their commitments to their colleges. And it's just, it's really, really hard. So,
yeah, it's been a very interesting season of college admittance. I think the past 2 years have been really unpredictable, I guess is the best word. But I think that you guys are saying that daily in school.
You think?
Everything we're dealing with is unpredictable.
Last 2 years, yes.
That's crazy. Yeah. So, before I let you guys all go, I one thing that has changed since we've last had a teacher panel is the mask requirement in schools. I believe all schools now nationwide don't have a mask requirement. So how is that affecting our people? I've talked to families who, my kids are still going to wear it because they're scared. I've had other parents say, I'm burning them. I can't. I'm so excited. You know, what are you seeing and how, I bet you've probably seen all of it. You're probably seeing a whole wide range of how people react to the mask mandate or the lack of mandate now. Lynn, what are you seeing?
Well, we lifted our mask mandate in March when we came back from our spring break. We did not have to wear them anymore. I personally feel lighter. I feel happier. I see smiles. I see genuine reactions. I know what all my kids look like now. I love it. I feel like I feel safe. You know, I still sanitize my room and I still make the kids wash their hands if they blow their nose, stuff like that. I'm much more conscientious of all that now. If they're sick, they go home right away. No questions. But I just feel like we're all human again. I feel like there's such a human balance back. And I just, you know, I had new students this year. And I didn't really know what they looked like until March.
Wow.
I love it.
Carol, you're in a different area. In Southern California, I feel like they're more, I visited there recently and I felt like they were more resistant to dropping the mask mandate. Are you seeing that in the classroom as well?
We did. We dropped the mask mandate. I can't give you the exact date, but it's been a bit. I do want to say after spring break, I have 20 students and 12 still come with the mask.
Yeah.
And they're happy to do so. The kids don't, some ask for the mask. So they still have the fear of germs and still talk to each other about covering their mouths. I have not had to say, please cover your mouth, because a little five-year-old tells the other five-year-old to do it before I do. So they're more conscious of their germs and how to spread them and how to, and I don't have to repeat very often, wash your hands or sanitize. They all sanitize on their own. They give each other sanitize. So in that respect, they're more responsible in that way. It's really cute to see, but they're think about where that's coming from. They're coming from fear, not because they just think it's a healthy way of living. We know that it is healthier. Like Lynn said, now it's just in the back of our head. Let's just clean a little bit more, continue to Clorox and this and that. But for them, it comes from fear. And so in that respect, it saddens me to know that this has been their first school experience. Still, they didn't come in without masks. They still came in with masks and had a full, we're almost done with our school year. Ours is the end of May. So they've had almost a full year with masks and some are very happy to not have it on. I still have a large percentage of my students with masks on. And I'm phonetically sounding out words all day long. So I'm happy to not have the mask during the day, unless I'm in a small group, then I just put it on because I'm a lot closer to the students, and out of respect for them and their parents.
Sure.
I still keep it on, but no parent has said to me, keep your mask on. They've been very respectful of my choices as well, and I of theirs. So I have a really good group of families this year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good to hear. Joel, what about the middle school? I don't even know which way to call it. If kids would be in middle school, I don't know. They can go either way.
Yeah, and I think that we're seeing that depending on each school situation, too. Mm-hmm. We are finding that the more title-funded schools are still relying on their masks, and they're kind of like security blankets. There is a little bit of fear, but it's more like a security blanket. I've known this population only with a mask on. It's been part of my routine, just like when I put on my uniform in the day. Mm-hmm. They're also slapping on their mask. And so I find that we probably have about 50-50 students and staff members actually still wearing masks. Higher achieving schools, more affluent areas, there are less masks, but there are still some students who decide to wear masks. So similar to Carol, you know, I still have masks in my office as well. So if a family comes in who I need to talk to, or if a student still has a mask on, I'll put one on, you know, just obviously if they want a mask, I'm going to put one on just to make them feel comfortable. Or we'll have a conversation and say, before we have this meeting that we know is going to be an hour, we can have masks on or off. It's up to you. Are we all comfortable without masks? If somebody says, I'd prefer that we wear masks, we're passing out masks and we're wearing them. It hasn't been an issue with students. You know, they're not giving each other a hard time or anything like that. So, you know, I was very curious at the beginning and saying, now that it's been a couple of weeks without masks, how come, you know, if I know a student well, why are you wearing a mask? Why do you choose to do it? Some of them don't even know. They say, I just feel more comfortable with it, or I don't know, I like it. So, cool. Right? It's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I have a friend with a middle school age daughter, and she's only worn the mask in middle school. And when the mask mandate dropped, she's freaked out. Like, I'm not going to not wear one. And it wasn't necessarily fear of the virus as much of it as it was being a middle school teenage girl, that half your face is hidden. And so there was like a comfort in that, which is so utterly depressing to me, but it speaks to the mind of a teenage girl. You know, you have that, they've broken out, they have pimples, whatever, nobody can see it anymore. You know, I have a mask on. So I think that's part of what we're seeing as well. I think there's some insecurities at that, especially at your age group, and girls too. They just, it's like a crutch or a security blanket. Joel, you said it best, I think.
Sure, we talked about that. That's social development and social regression. Mm-hmm. That's part of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jill brought up a really, really fascinating piece to this. And I mentioned social experiment in my last comment, because when you look to see who's wearing these masks, many of these young kids, maybe they spend time with their grandparents, maybe there's a high sensitivity to helping them stay safe. So they feel that onus of trying to keep themselves safe as well. So it just really, there's so many factors that are, we have no idea.
We have no idea. And I'm happy to hear that other kids are respecting the decision of each individual, which that's really what it comes down to. That's what you have to be comfortable with what you're doing. And so I'm happy that the kids are being respectful of each other. I think that's one positive that is coming out of the pandemic, is that personal choice, and people are respecting each other for that. So That's good news. I like to end on good news.
Yes.
Me too. When you guys are all wrapping up your school years, I'm so, so thankful for this time. You guys, it's been so insightful. All of these discussions, I look forward to them. And I love our panel. So thank you.
I do too. I love hearing from you all. And I'm really hoping that you guys do something for yourselves over the summer. Does anybody quickly go around the room real quick? Does anybody have any big plans for summer? Anything that you're doing just to take care of yourself?
I'm not teaching summer school.
Me too, Lynn.
Asked a million times, and I said, I'm sorry. My 8 weeks is my 8 weeks.
Nice. That's good. Joel, what about you?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to be the anomaly here and not having a big family. I take advantage of the time, the quiet time, to make sure that we're getting prepared and have a really good system in place for next year. So going into my fifth year at the same school as principal, you know, we have ways to step it up, and I want to work on all the stuff that we talked about today: student safety, retention for teachers, making sure that we have good, meaningful systems in place, so we're not burning people out. So I'll be working a little bit, but certainly finding some quiet times to get away to wine country or do something for myself as well.
Love it.
Yeah, thank you.
Make sure you do that, all of you. That's awesome, you guys. Well, thank you so much. Good luck with ending your school year. We have 5-6 weeks left for most of you. Power through. You guys can do it. I'm you blow me away with all that you are doing. So thank you. The world appreciates you. Well, maybe they don't outwardly, but I know in their hearts they do. But you know that Sandy and I do. We appreciate your time today. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to Learning Reimagined. If you are enjoying this podcast, please help us spread the word by clicking the subscribe button or share your favorite episodes with families and friends and leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts.